Stephen A., when we look at this, between Roger Goodell's statement, Drew Brees' statements, everything that's happened in the last 72 hours, how has the NFL changed?
Well, I think how the NFL changed is that what we've been seeing in the past, I don't think you're going to see that anymore. I don't think that you're going to see a particular player being blackballed or ostracized so flagrantly. I don't think that you're going to see NFL players being as silent as they were. I don't think you're going to see the NFL engaging in any complicity whatsoever, because they know that the heat is going to be brought down upon them. But it doesn't necessarily mean that a whole bunch of actions are going to change. Remember, the owners haven't said much at all, you know, and that's really what this comes down to. Pay attention to Roger Goodell's statement yesterday. Friday. What did he say? He apologized. He talked about the NFL needing to do better. He definitely mentioned Black Lives Matter, because the players and their powerful video that they came out with, led by Saquon Barkley and culminated with Odell Beckham Jr., Deshaun Watson and others getting involved, was a very profound thing that happened. But Roger Goodell never once mentioned Colin Kaepernick, and he didn't engage in any level of admission when it came to specificity as it pertained to Colin Kaepernick. And there's a reason for that. And the reason for that is that, guess what? You're not trying to invite a lawsuit. I know there was one. I know they had settled. But it's not a matter of double jeopardy or anything. It's that you could say anything that could be viewed as incriminating, and as a result, it can incite somebody to come at you in a way that's detrimental to the National Football League. So, that's really what this all comes down to. You're going to hear people speaking out. And, you know, with white America standing up and recognizing, you know, how the actions of things systemically have so drastically and flagrantly infected disenfranchised communities throughout this country. The fact that everybody has joined in recognizing how egregious that was, I don't think that you'll see things continuing in the same way that it had been in some people's eyes, in a lot of black people's eyes, for centuries. And that's really what this comes down to. So I definitely think change is in the making. And I'd be remiss in neglecting to point out the contribution that young white America has played in all of this. I had a friend in Atlanta told me they saw a young white person standing on a corner in Atlanta, Georgia, with a sign that said Black Lives Matter. I've been in the streets of New York City, and I've seen white folks walking around saying that, holding signs that said that, and what have you. And if you have the young white generation that's taken that position and resonating, remember, from a systemic perspective, we all know that white males have run this country. Well, guess what? These are their children. Their children are not going to be pigeonholed, minimized, marginalized, ostracized. That's not going to happen to their children. So if their children are standing up and speaking on behalf of disenfranchised communities in this country, that definitely is the number one instrument for change that will take place. I don't think there's any question about that, but it is important to point out you got to vote, too. And I think you're going to have a lot of people showing up to the voting polls in November.
Hearing Roger Goodell say Black Lives Matter was certainly a step. But Stephen A., what does the NFL need to do in terms of actually taking action, making change, moving forward in this movement?
My personal opinion is that the NFL would go a long way in ensuring that an African-American becomes an owner of an NFL team. Listen, when we talk about issues of diversity, you're not just talking about hiring. For example, with the Rooney Rule that was introduced in 2003, modified just weeks ago, where not just one candidate was interviewed, but two head coaching candidates needed to be interviewed. Plus, you added a coordinator's position to that rule as well. When you've got those kind of things going on, that's definitely a plus, and it's a step in the right direction. But if you're talking about making an emphatic step, how about diversifying the ownership? Why? Because they're the ones that hire the executive VPs for football operations, the general managers, the coaches, et cetera, et cetera. So that would definitely go a long way. But also, having that level of diversity in that room is incredibly profound, because some of the things that you would do as a good old boys club consisting of nothing but a bunch of white billionaires, you've got another voice that's in there. I know Shad Khan, that's not applicable to him, the owner for the Jacksonville Jaguars, because he's Pakistani. Plus, we've got an Asian American in Buffalo. But the other 30 owners are all white. And so when you diversify that, it's not just about the hiring. The decision making that transpires where the Board of Governors bring down their heavy hand upon the league in terms of what they want done and how they want things executed. If somebody else is in that room with an equally potent voice, you don't get to just sit there and do what you want to do without a response, or you don't get to operate with that level of impunity, because you have to literally justify it by being in a room with somebody that's diverse. And as a result, you're going to have to speak up and speak out, and people are going to be reluctant to do so when they have people on an equal playing field on their level that they're going to have to answer to. So my answer to your question would definitely be ownership, diversifying ownership in the NFL. It would be nice to see about two or three African-Americans in an ownership position in the National Football League. That, I think that would go a long, long way.
Stephen A. Smith joining us on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line, Peter Burns and Katie George. And when you look into this, Roger Goodell, he can talk about the ownership, but one of the things he did talk about is looking at the protests and saying, I will protest with you, and peaceful protest. What does that look like, Stephen A.? Like, how if players decide to take this to Sundays in the NFL going forward, what does that look like that makes sense that everyone can consume?
Well, first, I think step one would be kneeling, because when Colin Kaepernick kneeled, he was blackballed. So please understand that the first order of business when it comes to protesting, to answer your question directly about protesting in the National Football League, what does that look like? It would be kneeling. Why? Because it would be an indication you've learned and you have evolved. You'd recognize the fact that the African American community has been screaming at you since 2016 that Colin Kaepernick was not protesting against the flag. A matter of fact, Nate Boyer, you know, a former Green Beret who played in the National Football League for 1 year as a long snapper with the Seattle Seahawks, was the one that Colin Kaepernick had consulted, because he said sitting down and doing nothing is insulting to our flag. But taking a knee is being more respectful while still highlighting and illuminating your issue with the United States of America. So everybody taking a knee, or most folks taking a knee, that would be a step in the right direction, because it would highlight that you no longer harbor the feelings that you had at that moment in time in 2016. Mm-hmm. Secondly, showing some bravery when it comes to the president. I'm not here to get political. I'm certainly not here to encourage people who to root for, who to take sides with in that regard. That's not where I'm going with it. What I'm saying is that if you recall when Colin Kaepernick first took a knee in 2016, I think only 11 players in 16 out of 1600 plus players in the National Football League, only 11 joined him. When the president at a rally called the players sons of bitches and said that he would fire all of these guys, that was when over 200 players and other folks took a knee, including owner for the Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones, who was vehemently and adamantly against taking the knee prior to that moment and even thereafter. But that particular night on Thursday Night Football, even he took a knee in solidarity with the players. But let's take that into consideration. 1,600 plus players exist in the National Football League. 200 plus took a knee. Prior to that, 11 took a knee. I think there will be a different picture come this NFL season, at least initially. I think that you'll see practically everyone, whatever protest they decide to participate in, I think you'll see more, everybody coming together, more unity in that regard. And so to me, that's what it'll look like. That's what it should look like. Again, I'm not one of those guys that believes because Colin Kaepernick clearly and flagrantly was blackballed that he automatically deserves a spot in the league, because you haven't been in the league since 2016. You've been out of the league for nearly 4 years. I don't think that you just walk onto the field and play football just because this happened to you. I do think it warrants a tryout, a fair a tryout for all to see, but that's about all. And let's see what he's got. But as it pertains to the actual protest itself, I think that you can envision people taking a knee and people doing things to bring attention to whatever plight the black community elects to highlight, because that's what it's about right now.
I think you bring up an interesting point. What does it mean if Colin Kaepernick is not given the chance to at least try out for a team for a potential signing? What would that mean if he's not given that chance?
I think to the black community, I can tell you this, what it would be is that you still harbor the same feelings you harbored before George Floyd was killed, before Eric Garner, Walter Scott, and various others who were killed, Philando Castile and others were killed. I think it'll highlight the reality that feelings and emotions haven't changed. You just did what you needed to do to get through the moment. I think that these players in the National Football League and the black community at large, and again, joined by a lot of young white minds, I think they're going to bring attention as the season gets set to begin. They're going to bring a lot of attention to Colin Kaepernick being blackballed, and they're going to want that man to have a tryout. I don't think there's any question about it, and I think you can anticipate a lot of momentum being aimed in that direction in the weeks and months to come.
Stephen A. Smith joining Peter Burns and Katie George here on Best Week Ever. Stephen A., what can I do to understand the situation properly and better myself?
Listen. Listen when black folks talk to you about what we're going through, and more importantly, don't personalize it if it's not you. I said this on the air on Get Up with Greeny and Tim Hasselbeck and others just the other day, and when I was on First Take with Max Kellerman, I said, listen, if you're not a white person who is racist, who is prejudiced, who engages in exploiting every level of entitlement handed to you, then don't personalize it when black folks are telling you what they're going through. Listen to what they have to say, understand why, and then operate accordingly. And I think that's the most important thing. There's so many white folks that I've known, that I've worked with, that I've befriended and what have you over the years. And I always say to them, when I'm talking about things, I'm talking about a system that has flagrantly and unapologetically favored your race over any other race in American history. That doesn't mean they're talking about you. You might be white. You might be benefiting from it in a de facto sense or whatever the case may be. But it's not like you're going out and engaging in the business of disenfranchising, minimizing, and pigeonholing people. So if somebody's not talking about you, it's okay for you to acknowledge this is a bad system. It's unfair, and the advantage is tilted in your direction, without feeling like, oh my goodness, this black person that's talking to you is talking about you, that you're the one doing it. I think that's incredibly important go ahead.
No, just real quick. It's like I struggle with how do I have that conversation as a white male that's never really experienced this without coming across as condescending. I struggle with that because I feel like if I know people that I work with at ESPN, my friends, and I can go to, how do I even verbalize that? Because I feel uncomfortable even having that conversation because I'm like, well, now let me talk to you about what your issues are. Like it doesn't feel like I can verbalize that. Help me do that.
Well, first of all, in fairness to you, to some black folks, you can't, because there are some of us who get emotional, and obviously we're caught up in those emotions that we're not in a listening mode. That does happen. So I'd be remiss in neglecting to point out that reality that white folks have to deal with in terms of its challenges, because every black person isn't the same. I'm the kind of black person that can have that kind of conversation with you or anybody else and genuinely listen and still give my point of view without getting upset at you as a white guy, identifying yourself. Look, I'm white. I'm not black. These are my experiences. This is what I think. This is where that kind of thinking comes from. Here's where I stand. Let's talk about it. I can sit up there and listen to you say that and not be offended about it. A matter of fact, I'd appreciate it tremendously because you were willing to be honest and open enough and respected me enough to come to me and talk to me about whatever potential biases that you may have, acknowledging the fact that it may be unintended. This is how I was raised. This is the culture that I come from. This is what I was taught. I guess that I just adopted it without even paying much attention to it. Here's where I'm coming from. But I think that when you try to acknowledge that that's where you're coming from, a lot of folks will listen to you. Where some white folks get in trouble is on two extremes: when they're oblivious and they disregard you unapologetically because they don't want to hear your complaints. They want to act like, you know what, the world is great. You're in the greatest country in the world. What the hell could you be complaining for? You have that kind of attitude towards black people. It's incredibly offensive, but there's a flip side to it as well. I'll tell you something else that's very offensive to black people that some white people, not most, not all, but some white people engage in that's incredibly, incredibly disgusting in our eyes. You have some white people that view themselves as so progressive, so forward thinking that when they come and they talk to you, they think that if you put them in the room, they come across as if you put them in a room with black people, give them 10 minutes and they think they can tell you what it's like to be black. There's nothing more insulting than that, because every day that you wake up, if you're a white person, there is no way on earth you have to deal with that reality. So to come across like you fully understand, you fully have absorbed, and you're completely knowledgeable about the black experience, that can never ever be you. And the reason why it's so offensive to black people when you run across white people who think like that is because we know, for example, hypothetically or non-hypothetically, I am a black man. I am not a Jewish person. If I came across in front of Jewish people like I understood everything there was about being Jewish, Jewish folks would find that offensive. The reason I bring that up is that in this nation, we kind of know better than doing something like that when it comes to the Jewish community. The things that you could bring up about the Holocaust or anything else that's obviously related directly to the Jewish community. If you're not Jewish, there's a level of comprehension that you might be lacking. So we know instinctually that's taboo. That's an area we don't need to touch. On far too many occasions, we run across too many white people that don't find anything to be taboo when it comes to black people outside of potentially saying the N-word. People seem to know better than that. But outside of that, a lot of white folks don't appear to find anything taboo about communicating with the black community about certain things, or communicating about the black community about certain things. And that's very, very unfortunate, because that breeds contempt and anger and disgust. And that's really what everybody needs to know.